Welcome to Two Teas in a Pod. I'm Kate Diaz, a Manchester math teacher and elected president of CEA, the Connecticut Education Association. We are Connecticut's largest teachers union, representing tens of thousands of professional educators across the state.
And I'm Jocelyn Delancey, a fifth grade teacher in Darien, elected vice president of CEA and president of CEF, the Connecticut Education Foundation, CEA's charitable arm.
In every episode, you'll hear thought-provoking interviews, as well as actionable tips and strategies that you can implement in your daily life. We'll have stimulating discussions to help you become a more informed, an effective educator, and advocate for your students and the teaching profession.
Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's jump right into Two Teas in a Pod.
Well, hello. Today we are joined by the Connecticut State Department of Education Commissioner, Charlene Russell Tucker. I am so excited to have you on. Charlene has been a wonderful partner through some pretty complicated times in education. So I'm excited, though, to not talk about COVID today. I think that'll be enjoyable for us and give us the opportunity to explore some of the big ticket items, right? The big priorities really laying out in front of us.
Well, I think one thing that came out of COVID was the idea of remote instruction and how we can use remote instruction in mindful and meaningful ways. So I know, Commissioner, that we've had some ideas at the state level. Where do you see remote instruction? What are the benefits? What could we offer? What are we thinking about in a forward-thinking way using this tool?
So, Jocelyn, thank you for that question. And Kate, thank you for inviting me to be here with you. The past year, a couple of years, certainly has been challenging. One of the things sitting in this space that has been really something to think about, and I think exemplary in our state, is the partnership that we have, making sure diverse voices are at the table at every turn. And I so value the ability to be able to sit down together. And we joke about it. We don't always agree, but we're always willing to have conversation. And to me, that is what benefits our education system because we're all a part of it.
Very true.
And remote instruction, Jocelyn, as you mentioned, you know, it's a lot of conversations that we've had. And we recognize looking back, I don't want to overuse the term that we've got to build back maybe differently as we mm-hmm. look back and then we're looking forward. What did we learn and where the future is? You know that we had legislation that was passed, which I thought was really forward thinking that allowed us to sit back at a state and say, what have we learned from the previous year about remote instruction? We've heard so many, and I've seen, being in some of our classrooms, the challenges of trying to do dual instruction. It was a challenge, you know, who's in front of you, who's online. And not only a challenge for our educators, but really a challenge for our students as well. We've heard
Absolutely.
That from them. And so we recognized that we needed to go back and we've got to do something different moving forward, but we need to learn from what has happened. And so I believe the legislation that allowed us to have a remote learning commission, and thank you, Kate, for being a really consistent voice.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
You know, with all our other partners there to say, what have we learned? Let's learn from states around us. Let's talk to those who have been doing this ahead of us. And so what we build in our state can be informed by all of that. So we look to a future of designing learning spaces that provide new ways for our students to interact with their educators, with their teachers and their peers, new ways to collaborate, new ways to create and demonstrate and engage in learning, and actually new way when we talk about access and opportunity, that I think it also allows us, right? It allows a district that may not offer a particular course of study that students may be able to access that. So we have all kinds of opportunities, and I think that what lies ahead of us in this space.
Yeah, and Charlene, you mentioned the task force, the remote learning that has been a really, I think, important voice in this process for me. It has been a really diverse group of people, but it's interesting how we kind of land in some really common spaces that speak to the strengths and the potential pitfalls. And so I think you're right. You know, I know I've advocated to the legislature to please let this remote commission do its work. Let's not try and rush. You know, I think what we know to be true is that the worst possible decision we could be making is one that we make with sort of this sense of pressure and, oh my gosh, hurry, hurry, hurry. Because there are nuances. There are ways that remote learning is successful and ways that it is very much so not successful. And I'm going to say pretty straightforward that we know that dual instruction is probably the worst mechanism of remote learning. And we don't certainly advocate here and on our side for any of that. But having said that, we do know that there is a value to a remote space and a value to well-structured remote learning opportunities that really have guidance and support. So, you know, like you, I'm really hoping that the legislature doesn't jump the gun, right? Like they get excited when we start talking about some of this stuff. And I love that passion. I love that support for education. But there's no rush is what I kind of feel. I feel like it's far more important that we get it right than we get it done fast.
And Kate, I certainly support that concept. And what I say to legislators, I really think they got this right, which is about us being very deliberate in our process that actually allows for this upcoming school year for us to see what this could look like in grades 9 to 12.
Right.
And we together develop really great remote learning standards to guide that. And we're saying to districts, take this slow, right? Take this in slow, let's learn from it. And so we don't always have this opportunity, but we do have this opportunity to say, let's see what it looks like at the high school level. Let's learn from it before we then go, you know, full scale across the board. And so to me, that was a gift. And you're right. I'm hoping our legislators allow us to appreciate that gift that was handed to us around this, in this space.
Well, we'll send them this podcast, Charlene, as a gift. Please, legislators, trust your first instincts. They were good, you know. But while we're talking about legislators, there's some really interesting work being done, I think, with the legislature this session, acknowledging sort of the toll that the pandemic has taken on not just students, but teachers, and how that sort of changed the landscape in terms of mental health and what we do within schools, how we support the students and families. What do you think about some of those things that are on the table, and what are you excited to see us talking about?
So I tell you, and we know we have limited time because I can really go on and about this particular topic.
I know. There's so much to cover.
there is so much. I am excited that we're having the conversation about the importance of social, emotional, and mental health supports for our students as foundational to their success. And the reason I'm so excited that we're all in this space, I've been talking about that forever. For those of you who followed my career know that the non-academic barriers for learning is something that I've always advocated that we've got to pay attention, because without that, we won't achieve, you know, the level of success that we're going to have. I sometimes think about it as the yeast, you know, in a cake, in a bread.
Yes.
Right? That critical ingredient that you may get a product at the end, but it won't be the good taste that you're going after because you've left something out. And I've always thought that that was really critical and important. And so the fact, unfortunately, it took the pandemic, I think, in order for us to be here, but we're here. So forget, you know, where we've been. We're at this moment where everyone's having this conversation. And so I'm so thrilled that legislators are in this space. All our partners are in this space. We recognize how critical this is and that we've got to work together on really the best outcomes. If you've listened to me and those that's listening, you've heard me talk about my big audacious goal. And my big audacious goal is that in Connecticut, that all our schools, every building, will have a sustainable system of coordinated care for all our K-12 schools to have this support, not only for our students, but for our staff as well. They're very much in this space. And so we've got to work together to create them. And, you know, it may look different in different places.
Right.
It may be hiring more appropriate staff in some places. It may be, you know, aligning resources with behavioral health providers in communities.
Yep.
And so we want to know what that looks like. And so we now have a pilot that we're funding so we can learn from that. So when we go to scale, we know what we're scaling.
Yep.
But back to your question, Kate, I am so really thrilled that we're all realizing that we've got to do something, we've got to resource it, and we've got to work to support. And as I said, our school staff are critical. They need to be supportive. They've got to be at their best so they can give their best.
Well,
and that really is important.
I agree. And I say this a number of times, that our teachers' teaching conditions are our students' learning conditions, right? And so we need teachers who feel safe and confident, and so that they can, you know, care for kids to be feeling safe and confident in their learning and their socializing and all of the skill sets that they learn within a school that most are, you know, we have the academics in our curriculum, but most of the skill sets that we learn through school are not necessarily academic. They're problem solving. There's empathy, you know, care for others. How do we self-advocate? You know, all of those really important skills. And if kids aren't feeling safe and confident in their own learning environments, they just can't have the same level of success that we would hope for them to have academically. So I really appreciate the conversation.
And I love your big audacious goal. I share that. I'm going to fight for that too. I'm going to put my name on that one. Sign me up. Because let me tell you, you've just described like a dream teacher environment where when a kid is struggling, I'm not scrambling. I know exactly what to do. You know, I think about my experience as a high school teacher. High school teacher and drama are not unfamiliar friends, right? We know exactly what that is. I'm sure Jocelyn can stay the same as a fifth grade teacher. But I can speak from my experience that I was placed sometimes in positions where I was like, okay, this is really difficult. This kid is struggling. Okay, what am I going to do? My district had, my high school in particular, had quite a few resources available. And I think about how much I relied on those things as a classroom educator to really support not just my students, but me. Because honestly, if I don't know that my students are cared for, I spend time worrying about them. That's energy and space that takes up my life. When I know that my kids are in a good space, they have the support they need, they are healthy, it's better. You know, I can feel, I can do what I need to do. So to that end, I think that that is primarily like what you're saying. You know, it's a big audacious goal, but it is also a game-changing kind of goal. And you're right. I'm excited to hear that it's not just you and I and Jocelyn thinking this is big and important. We are hearing a lot of voices come to the table and say schools need to be essential resource, you know, providers.
Well, and I think Kate and I come from such vastly different communities teaching-wise. And so I think that when we look at this, it's a need in every community, right? It's not one that's solo to a specific demographic group or social group. This is something that all kids and all districts need in order for our schools to, you know, continue to work in a great and supportive way to support kids.
And, you know, that's exactly right. And that's why we say we look for this statewide. And a small pilot give us different demographics that we're testing this out to see what we would need. Because as I said, a small district, you know, maybe looking at partnership differently than a larger district with more staffing capacity. But Kate, to the point you make, imagine if when things start going, I'll say sideways, right in a classroom, that a teacher has the support and know exactly what to do and the folks who are there to provide that support. So the disruptions, right? You lessen the disruptions. And in my viewpoint, then that's improving and increasing the learning.
Oh, 100%.
You're able to do that, right? And it's not just take them out and put them someplace.
No.
Making sure those needs are met. Those needs are met may also extend to the family.
Right.
May, you know, extend to the community resources and all of that. So that is really, when I said it is my dream, that we're able to do that.
Right.
Because if we do, I think we would see you know, outcomes really exponentially improved if we're able to connect that with all the other great things that we're working on, making sure that there is quality curriculum, all of those things, but they really must all be connected.
I would agree. And I think something else that it's a common goal and probably a big goal that we all share as well is ensuring that we have a diverse workforce, you know, so that our students in our classrooms are seeing themselves represented in their teachers and their school leaders. And I think that that's another goal that we have and that I'd love to talk to you about in terms of how are we working to move forward in recruiting and maintaining a diverse teaching force.
And another great topic. And keep in mind, these are not disconnected.
Oh, really, not even remotely.
Right?
All of these things are very, I don't know. I think in the world of education, it's very hard to come up with disconnected topics because everything tends to feed one another. You are correct.
Absolutely. We know that there's a wide range of evidence that supports the benefits of the diverse educator workforce. Improve outcomes, right? Reduce dropout rates, increase college admissions and achievement gains. And so I'm really pleased that our State Board of Education, in its last 5 years strategic plan, really that was named, and this was back in 2016, in ensuring equity and excellence for all Connecticut students. And one of the key goals was really unlocking the potential in every child by ensuring that that child is embraced in a culture of high expectations, learns from great teachers in great schools run by great leaders. And so a part of that was looking at the diversity of our educator core in our state. And the board set as a goal in 2017 that by 2021, that we would have go from about 8% of educators of color to 10%. And we've actually exceeded that goal, which is really great. But while we have a small win and we can check that box, we know there's so much more to be done.
Agreed.
So we have a range of initiatives that we're working on to make sure that we are indeed moving in that direction. You know, I'll point out that just a few weeks ago, we had our second annual Educator Rising Conference. And this program provides high school students who are interested in careers in education with clear, engaging pathways for higher education institutions. A subset of that is our Male Educator Network, or Men of Color Initiative. Again, trying to, this is a small pilot right now, but there's 11 young men in two districts that are engaged in that work, and we're gearing up for a virtual career fair that we're working on, and so much more. I'm going to plug a couple of documents, which somehow I'll get them to you, and maybe we can share them with our networks. And
absolutely.
One of them is the 11 ways that CSCE is leading educator recruitment and diversification efforts. And we're really delineating the work that we're doing here. There's a state board meeting, and our team will be unveiling a new reciprocity certification process.
Right, I saw that.
And I think it's also going to just make things a little bit easier to get folks in. So the work continues. And back to your voices are just so important. And it's not only recruitment, but it's also retention.
Yes.
So we go back to climate and culture and finding value in work and where you are. All of these, as we said before, there's a convergence here, because if we recruit and the environment and the supports are not there, then it will be a cycle. They're in
the
and
revolving
they're out.
Door.
Exactly.
And so, I'm with you.
So I think
you're talking about all the things that get us excited, right? The bringing in of new voices and finding space for different viewpoints and perspectives. You know, that's foundational to education. It's never been intended to be an isolating experience. It's intended to be an exposing experience, something that allows you to see the world differently. And so it's really important and critical that we find ways to bring in new voices. And I'm just going to say this. The reciprocity thing is coming at a nice time. My son just told me he's changing his major and he's going to become a teacher, and he's in Massachusetts. I know I clearly must have done a good job pitching this to him. So it's exciting to see that we're finding ways to, you know, open doors. And I think there's still more work we can do. And new other ways to think about certification and how we support young educators. You know, I just think there's a lot we can accomplish when we start to think creatively. So I'm excited to get your documents. I'll share those out. You send those our way. I think awesome. I think knowing how we in the classroom can support those efforts is really important too. Because, you know, when you talk about the educator rising, the high school students and the young men of color who, you know, it sounds like small bite, right? 11 young men of color thinking about education. But if we turn those 11 young men into 11 teachers of color, that's huge. That's a huge gain for our profession to have those voices join us. And so, you know, I look at it as an educator and say, how do we support that work, right? What can we do on the ground? And I think knowing about the programs is step one, right? Knowing that they exist, that we should be directing students towards them. I also think personally, sometimes we forget to talk about why we're teachers. We forget to tell our students why this is the best job in the world. And so I'm going to make my pitch right now for teachers to take a time, you know, sometime in the next, you know, 2 weeks to think about how do you tell your students the greatness of this job? Because I think it's easy to see all the things that make it hard. Those are very exposed.
Especially right now.
Yes, especially right now. But it's still, you know, amidst a pandemic, my son switched his major and said, I still want to do that job. And there, he's not alone. There are kids out there thinking and going, I think this is my, my calling.
Well, there truly is no better profession. You know, I got to spend, I went into a classroom for a half hour the other morning and it just lightened my day. It just made me happy to see those students learning and engaged and creative and how that teacher was feeling, you know, just in their interactions with their class. And so it just really does. There is no better profession. So the more that we can make access and motivation and just kind of driving that this profession, we have smart, sophisticated, and really super humans in our schools. So how do we open that opportunity for more people?
It is life changing, is what I say. that's the profession that we're in, and there's so much to be done. I, as I said, I so value this, and Kate and Jocelyn, I thought about as when I was coming on, and I'm going to put a question. I don't know if it's a question or a challenge. To say, what can we do from the Department of Education this summer? So I'm looking to the summer. What can we do to really say to our educators, we see you, we hear you, and what can we do for you so that you can, you know, your buckets can become full again, right, for when you need to come back.
We'll need,
so I'll throw that out there.
You know what? Charlene, I'm going to let you have the last word with that because I think it's a great question. And I think we'll leave it for our members to share back and say, this would be the difference. Because like you, I'm looking for the hope in all of this. And I'm looking for the things to get excited about this job. And I think thinking forward, knowing what your needs are is really powerful. So, all right, members, you heard it. Charlene wants to hear from you. So we will put that out there and we'll send you the answers.
Awesome. And that is awesome.
We can't thank you enough for chatting with us this afternoon. It's really been important dialogue, and we look forward to having you back.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you so much. Thank you for the partnership. And to all the educators, you know, we know you do. You know what you're doing, and we thank you for being there.
We want to thank all of our members for all you do and for listening to the latest edition of Two Teas in a Pod.
For more education talk, subscribe to Two Teas in a Pod and find us at cea.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like what you heard? Share a podcast with your friends and colleagues and spread the word because we are
stronger together.